So we're on, I don't know which page, it's Mama Shani in the middle of Ois Nun. Mama Shani in the middle of Ois Nun. Let me know if we're okay with the sound. Now I'm using my natural amplifier. We've been seeing last week that Hashem wants us to serve Him with the full spectrum of our, what we'll call, koiches hanefesh, our inner characteristics. He wants there to be the right element of fear, the right element of love, which is really the umbrella of it all, simcha, etc. And there are a lot of different departments that have to be contributing their share to Avodas Hashem. And as we discussed 2 weeks ago, this extends also to all of the different functions of the human constitution, right? All the different mitzvahs have to be brought into play in the right way. Therefore, Yiddishkeit is not about all the way in one direction, all the way in a different direction, etc. It's about getting the right balance in everything. But just give an example. The Jewish calendar. The Jewish calendar. The Yom Tovim. And we've said this often. But this brings out this point in a very important way. I'm a little bit over. Sorry. No, that's perfect. You don't need to move too much. Just people can get by. The Yom Tovim. The Yom Tovim are not a haphazard collection of commemorations. You know what the Yom Tovim are? It's a recipe. These are big contributors to the Jewish constitution, the Jewish mind. You know, quoted Reb Shimshon Pinkus. Reb Shimshon Pinkus used to say, he said that when he was a kid, he found it funny that when he went to hear a speech about Hanukkah or about Pesach, about any particular Yom Tov, the speaker made it out as though this Yom Tov was it. It was the most important Yom Tov. All of the most fundamental elements of Judaism are inherent in this Yom Tov. You've heard speakers do that, right? And said he found it kind of amusing. You go to a speech about Pesach. Pesach is the most important Yom Tov in the calendar. A few months later, you're at a speech about Rosh Hashanah. It's all about Rosh Hashanah, right? So he said he found it kind of amusing until he said, I grew older and I started lecturing and I found myself doing the same thing. When I spoke about Hanukkah, Hanukkah was everything. When I spoke about Yom Kippur was everything. He said, but then I understood that it's all true. When you hear different specialists coming to speak and the neurologist goes on and on about the vitality of the brain and the cardiologist goes on and on about the vitality of the heart. You see, oh, I already heard 3 or 4 speeches of it. They're all overdoing it. They're all saying the same thing. Each one thinks his field is the most important field. Or is the answer, they're all right. Right? They're all right. So the truth is, each Yom Tov is coming to contribute a fundamental element to your consciousness throughout the whole year. And it's meant really to bring home a lesson that you're meant to carry throughout the whole year. So now let's speak of it in terms of ingredients, in terms of a recipe. You are supposed to have the right combination of Yira, Ava, Simcha, sadness about the fact that we're not as close to Hashem as we should be, Emuna, Bitachon, etc. So how does that work? On Sukkot, that's when you get a heavy dose of Simcha. And that's meant to carry you throughout the year. Yom Noroim, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, then you're meant to internalize the awe of interacting with the Melech. And that's also something you're supposed to come away from it with an impact that lasts you over the year. And that blends with the Simcha you have on Sukkot. Okay? And then there's Pesach, when you're really focusing on when we first got to know Hashem, the basics of our Emunah, which is another ingredient that's being mixed into the blend. And then you come to the 3 weeks. That's also an important ingredient. the sadness of the fact that we're distanced from Hashem, we're not as close as it could be, which also blends in to the Simcha and the Ava. Sounds strange, but that's how it is. The Jew is supposed to be that right balance and the right blend of all these different parts. Now, in the same way, you have bodily functions, right? There's eating, there's marital issues, and all kinds of other such things. Those are meant to be used in Hashem's service, while at the same time, they have to be controlled, regulated, done in a disciplined way so that they don't take you over. That people with these things take them over. So, we now continue. Eladvar, everything we've been discussing, the Torah didn't just say, look, Simcha is important, and Yira is important, and Ava is important. And, like we said before, it's important to be with your wife, but it's also important to have self-control, and it's important to eat, but it's also important to be able to tell yourself no. Take all that, and now go figure it out for yourself. No. The Torah went further, and the Torah gave you, at least in a broad way, a program. How much of each? The Torah regulates things. Aval kulam tachas maseris. It's all under a prescribed program. If neisha ein biyicholas bnei adam letaken lechalek takanas koyches hanefesh vaguf. People can't come and figure out exactly how much of each is needed. And therefore Hashem came and dictated how much rest you should have as opposed to how much being busy. Now note that also. You have to work for 6 days and then you rest on Shabbos. It's very important to rest on Shabbos. Because if you go through your whole life busy, you go through your whole life just running, you have no time to think, and you're just caught up with the constant rush of life, the stress of life, you never have time to step back for a minute to think about the basics. Shabbos, you sit back, you view things from a broader perspective, you spend some time thinking, you spend some time stepping out of the rush, very important. So now, what happens if a person says, I'm in a position that I could have Shabbos 7 days a week. I don't need to work at all. And even better. No, it's not good. It's not good. Because on the other hand, as important as it is to have time to step out of being busy, it's crucial to be busy. If a person has Shabbos all week long, we come to what Chazal said. Being idle gets a person into trouble. So it's important to have time when you're not doing anything. And it's important to be very busy. How do you figure out what the right measure is? The Torah comes and says, Sheishas yamin tavoy. Be busy for 6 days. But then relax on that 7th day. Rest on that 7th day. Now again,
let's say for the learning, shouldn't one be in some ways more intense on Shabbos?
Whatever the case is, it's going to be a menucha. Meaning, for example, exactly what you're saying. Because I'll say, and again, this is in a broad way. Everything we're saying now is in a broad way because it gets very, very individual and it breaks down to a million different manifestations. But in a broad way, Chazal say, for a person who doesn't have time to learn throughout the week, Shabbos should be dedicated to learning. This is also a form of menucha. You're stepping out to refresh spiritually. But Talmud Chacham was busy intensely learning all week. Shabbos, he should rest. He should take a nap. Now, this certainly doesn't mean that he has to spend all day in bed. It doesn't either mean that the guy who's working all week should not take a nap on Shabbos. All these things you have to develop further. But in the broad picture, Shabbos is a classic example of balancing out two important things. Being busy and having time to step out of the rush. It's like the Chassid Sharon says, one of the three great impediments to a life of conscientiousness and growth is being too busy. You don't have time to step down and take stock of what's going on with your life. He says that was Paro's plan. When Paro said, "Tichbad avoda al anoshim," as soon as he saw the Jews started talking about redemption, heritage, this, that, what did he do? He stepped up the work. It wasn't just that he was getting back at them. It wasn't just that he was punishing them. He was employing a strategy. Give them no time to think. Give them no time to think. They'll never get anywhere. So again, it's about balance. Now, who can do this? The Torah does it. Would we be able to figure out 1 out of 7? This is a divine prescription. V'shia ma she'toytzia oretz ad she'tishbois b'shmita v'yoyvel v'yinotzim mimena ha'maisvus. He also regulated how long you work the land before you give it a break. I don't know, I've heard it said that there's actually that it's actually good for the land. I'm not familiar with these things, that it actually works out perfectly, the 6 year working and then the year break, that it works out perfectly for the, as far as the land's purposes are concerned. I don't know, I heard that said, not in an authoritative way. It would be interesting to check out. But whatever it is, this is also a point of balance as far as we're concerned. You're supposed to be working the land. But on the other hand, it's important for you to realize that the land is not yours. And at the end of the day, you're guests. Every so often, Hashem reminds you, this is mine, now don't touch. You're not the Balabais. Now, how often do you need such a reminder? Once in 7 years. Again, in the broad picture. Sometimes Hashem works out for different individuals, different circumstances. But in the broad picture, this is what Hashem is saying is good for man, is good for the Jewish people.
What's he supposed to do on that rest period?
What's that?
What's he supposed to do on that rest period?
You're learning Torah. I'm sorry to be repetitive. It always comes back to the same point. But that's actually what they do. And today, right, when they you have the funds, the Shviyas funds, that are supporting farmers, part of the point is that they open up learning programs to them throughout that year. They take out a sabbatical, and it's a very, very big spiritual injection for these people. You give meister from your crops. Now this also is an issue of balance. We're not going to relate it specifically to the land now, but also, as we said before, a person should be open-handed. Is that the expression? Meaning generous. On the other hand, you have to know how to take care of yourself. You have to take care of yourself, you have to be well-established so that you'll be in position to give. If a person is a doormat, he's not giving properly at all. So here also, Hashem comes and says, Maisa, this is the amount to give. On the one hand, don't turn yourself into a tzedakah case. But on the other hand, every Jew should be giving. How do you work that out? Hashem once again comes and says, this is how you work it out. And that's also, there's a famous chazal, where chazal said Koirach, in his campaign against Moshe, one of the things he picked on was Maisa. Remember he came and told the sob story, the Medrash tells us. Remember his sob story? He told a very dramatic story. This is a great way. They do this today in the press also. You present things from a very emotional angle, and then people are already not interested in whether it has anything to do with fact or not, as long as it's good and emotional. So he came and he told a terrible story about an almana who had a very, very tough life, and she worked hard and finally got herself a little patch of land, and she grew a small crop and whatever it is, and she thought she's going to have food for her and for her small children. And then, what do you know, the bureaucrats come along, and right away the parasites, the kain takes from here, the lady takes from that, by the time, after all that work, and her, and her children, are hungry again. That was his big thing against Moshe. Right? Now, at that point, Bechlal, there was no land, and there was no Meiser, it was still in the Midbar. It was all theoretical. But he was showing where this is going. What was his big mistake? Okay, so of course, you don't have to figure out what his mistake was. He had an agenda. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. Again, look at the press. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. Don't worry about accuracy. The agenda is the agenda. But the Rambam says, the oilam lehani odam in atzaka. People didn't become poor from it because Hashem set the amounts upright that people won't become poor. How, does that always work that way? Apparently. People don't become poor from giving a ma'isa. And now again, I'm talking about crops. Ma'isa k'safim is already a different discussion. I imagine that it applies there too. But again, we're talking about the Doraisa level. The Doraisa level of the crops, Hashem is saying, give this, this is right, this will not get you into trouble. This is the perfect balance of, on the one hand, being generous enough, while on the other hand, taking care enough of your, of yourself. Mordechai Neugershal told this story. This is the way they operate. Mordechai Neugershal said, he said often, when people come with emotional arguments, it just, any logic falls away. So he was once giving a whole lecture on the topic of, he's out there facing the irreligious world and kind of doing a career of PR. He was once talking about the most popular and volatile subject in the state of Israel since its founding, Rav Mordechai Neugershal. Of course, why don't those yeshiva boys do the army? As he said, it's not a question, it's a slogan. No one's looking for an answer. It's a slogan. Looks like a question mark, really it's an exclamation point. Why don't the yeshiva boys do the army? So he was giving a whole speech about it. And he has a very, very well-developed presentation on this subject, which is fascinating to hear. But whatever it is, he's giving his thing, and he felt that he had the tzibur. He speaks to intellectuals, and he felt that he had the crowd with him. The crowd was connecting to what he was saying. And then somebody got up and described the nephew that they lost in the army. He gave a whole thing about what a wonderful guy was, and he died defending. And he said, like, this fellow was not challenging any of the points I made. But he was telling a very tear-jerking story about his nephew, and I saw I was losing the crowd. And it was like, you know, it's like not even fair. I at least challenged my points. So he said, you know what I did? So I grew up as an orphan. As soon as the guy finished his question, he said, oh, I know what it means to go through suffering. I described how hard life was as an orphan in very dramatic terms. I got the people moved to tears. They were back with on my side, and then I continued my subject. So that's basically what Korach was trying to do. You have to know how to deal with it. Rav Mordechai Neugershal, he's Hebrew speaking. I think he actually has lectures in English also. But he's Hebrew speaking. It's amazing to hear. Brilliant. Okay, whatever it is, back to our point. So again, the Mises is another example of Hashem setting it up right, getting that right balance. Vizula season, and other such examples. V'tziva al shvi'is ha'sa Shabbos, or shvi'is ha'sa Moyadim, or shvi'is ha'sa Oretz. He commanded us to rest on Shabbos. He commanded us to rest on the Moyadim. He commanded us to let the land rest at Shemitah. Hakol zeicher liyitzias Mitzrayim, v'zikaron lemaaseh bereishis. All of this is for the purpose of bringing home that fundamental. Let's remember again, the Moyadim and Shabbos are all under the category of mitzvahs that we call Eidos. Eidos means testimonials. Right? These are mitzvahs that are meant to bring home certain points. And therefore, a person who goes through Shabbos and the Moyadim never thinking about their point is completely missing the point. Because, again, these are things that are meant to really bring home the fundamentals and imbue us with these consciousnesses. Yitzias Mitzrayim, Maaseh Bereishis, Mipnei Sheshnei Anyonim Doimim. Because how did the two come together, right? Have you ever wondered about that? On Kaddish on Shabbos, we always keep stressing, Zecher Yitzias Mitzrayim, Zecher Maaseh Bereishis, Zecher Yitzias Mitzrayim, Zecher Maaseh Bereishis. Where do the two come together? What is the theme of Shabbos? Is it Zecher Yitzias Mitzrayim or is it Zecher Maaseh Bereishis? So he says, really, it's both the same point. The point is not to commemorate an event. If the point was to commemorate an event, we wouldn't know how to put the two together, but that's not the point. The point is to internalize a fundamental of Emunah, and that is that Hashem runs the world and He's the absolute boss. That came out through the fact that He created the world, and also the Yetzias Mitzrayim was demonstrated that He continues to control and maintain every last element of the world. So really it's all the same point. It's getting to know Hashem and understanding who He is. So Yetzias Mitzrayim and Zecher Lemaaseh Bereishis are not two themes. It's one theme. And again, Hashem gives us a Shabbos every week. Because once again, it's an issue of dosage, like we've been saying. You need a dose of this emunah every once a week. And then every so often you need a bigger, heavier dose to carry over for a longer time. That's what the mayadim are. And even each of the mayadim is bringing out a different element of it. Okay? Like the mikra, like the teva. That everything happened and happens with Hashem's will, not by itself, not through nature. The kashomer yisbarach. It's like Hashem Himself says, "Ki sha'alno liyomim harishonim shehayu lifanecha." Hashem admonishes the Jewish people. Ask, inquire into history. Ask about how things worked in earlier times. Hashama om kol elokim. Has there ever been a nation who actually heard the voice of Hashem? Meaning again, what was the purpose of Har Sinai? Hashem wanted to show the Jewish people who He is. He wanted to introduce Himself to them. Yes, Hashem created the world, but nobody was there to see it. So Hashem came and introduced Himself to the Jewish people in Mitzrayim and Har Sinai so that they should get to know Him personally. Has it ever happened that you saw a God come and wage war openly to wrench one nation out of the grasp of another? The Aisa Shmiras HaShabbos He Ba'atzmo HaHaidah Ve'elokus. And the truth is that keeping Shabbos in itself is an expression of our acknowledgement of Hashem's supremacy. Aval Ki'ilu HaHaidah Masis. It's an expression not through articulation, which we do also, by the way, right? That's what we do at Kiddush. But we live on Shabbos. Our whole existence is simply expressing Hashem is the boss. What's the idea? Rav Hirsch has a beautiful exposition on this. Again, what the Kuzari is always been how it works. What the Rishonim say in a sentence, the Achronim develop. What the Kuzari means here is as follows. What is the point of Shabbos? What's the idea of Shabbos? You don't do malacha. What's the idea? The idea is Shabbos was really the first day of man's existence in the world. Right? First 6 days of creation. Man was created Friday, went right into Shabbos. So therefore, Shabbos in a sense is the first day of life in this world. Right? Not the seventh day. The first day of life in this world. So Hashem says, you enter the world, first realize that it's not yours. Don't touch. I'm the boss, and I don't let you touch today. That's what the idea of the 39 malachas are. By the way, we have to bring home an important point. What's the point of the malachas? The point of the malachas is not to work, not to exert yourself. That's not the point of the malachas. If you choose to schlep a heavy dress back and forth across your living room all day long on Shabbos, that's fine. Enjoy yourself. Sweat it out. Just don't click on a light. It's not about exertion. The malachas are creative activity. All of the malachas. Different levels, but all of the malachas are creative activities. You're achieving something. You're affecting something. What's the idea? Basically, it's man's control of the world. Man's control of the world basically manifests through the 39 malachas. If you weren't able to do malachas at all, you wouldn't get very far at all. Right? Man's rule over the world manifests through the 39 malachas. Now, Hashem made us the balabatim of this world, right? Hashem put the world at our disposal. But Hashem says, I don't want you to start thinking that it's really yours. Remember that you're guests here and this is private property. And therefore, your first day of the world is, don't touch, it's not yours. Don't mess, don't tinker, sit back, you're in someone else's home. When you're in someone else's home, you don't fix things, and you don't break things, and you don't cook things. You sit back and you do what you're told. Wait till you're invited. That's what Shabbos is. That's why we don't do malacha on Shabbos. Well, we don't do malacha on Shabbos because Hashem said not to. But that's part of the idea of why Hashem said not to. Okay? So therefore, what are you declaring? By sitting back on Shabbos and not doing anything, you are declaring, through your lack of activity, Hashem, Melech Hashem is the boss, Hashem is the creator. This is His domain. So it's living that Hashem is the creator. It's not just declaring it, and not just reminding yourself of it. It's living that Hashem is the creator. A person who accepts upon himself the mitzvah of Shabbos, because that was when the creation was completed, he is obviously acknowledging that the world was created by a creator. A person who acknowledges that the world was created is also obviously acknowledging the world was created, then there is a creator. A person who does not acknowledge Shabbos as the day of the completion, meaning it wasn't necessarily a completion, maybe it always was as we know it, he might believe that the world always was. There was never a point of completion. He does not have pure emunah in the Creator. So if we understand that that's what Shabbos is, he comes back to what he was saying before. The king of Khuzar asked, look at these other religions. You claim that you're the holiest nation. Look at them. They have people living in caves with skins, ascetics, etc. Right? So he said, who said that that's the way of showing piety and getting close to Hashem? According to what we've just said now, on the contrary, in Kein Shmiras HaShabbos, according to the way we just understood Shabbos, that Shabbos is testifying, living, experiencing that the world was created and belongs to a creator. That brings a person closer to Hashem than a person who lives in asceticism. Now you say asceticism and abstinence.
Based on that, just based on this alone, why would the goyim not keep Shabbos?
Why do the goyim not keep Shabbos? I'm glad you asked that question, because I wasn't thinking of saying this now, but once you ask it, we'll say something that completes the picture. And this is something beautiful that Rav Hirsch says. But you know what? Before we do that, I'll give a more basic answer. The Rambam implies that the point is that for Goyim, leisure is not a good thing. As we said before, being idle is not healthy, unless you know what to do with it. What to do with the time. You know what to do with the time, it can be very productive. You don't know what to do with the time, when do all the stabbings happen?
Sunday.
On the weekends, right?
Yeah.
Because they have their Shabbos. For a guy, it's a dangerous thing. They're better off keeping them busy throughout the whole week. That's why even for Jews, we say, one day, more than that might not be healthy. A person has too much time to think, might start making himself mishugah. Okay? But no, there's something deeper here. There's something more to this. Let's continue along the thing that we said. Rav Hirsch asked the question we asked before. We keep on saying, Shabbos, Zecher, Lamas Liberation, and Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Shabbos, we keep stressing the two things. Which is it? Right? So we gave our answer before the Kuzari's answer. Rav Hirsch says as follows. As we just explained, Shabbos is manifesting Hashem as the boss. Right? Shabbos is a declaration through our whole life on that day, not just by saying it, that Hashem is the owner of the world. Right? Now, listen to this. In other words, what you're doing on Shabbos is you are coming and representing Hashem's sovereignty. Right? Hashem's rule in the world. In other words, you're a representative of Hashem. You're the one who's making that clear. Can anyone just decide of his own accord to come along and say, I represent the king? An ambassador. Let's say a person shows up and presents himself as the representative of that government, King of England. I would imagine that that's treason. Right? To come and present yourself as representing that king when you're not actually authorized to do so. A person would get killed for doing that. Not anybody can come and claim the distinction, I'm going to manifest Hashem's supremacy in the world. Who are you? What are your credentials? Were you asked to do that? The Jewish people were crowned as Hashem's ambassadors. Hashem gave them that great function, and therefore they're the ones who through their experience of Shabbos are declaring Hashem as the owner. A guy is going to come and do that? Chayiv Misa, you're declaring yourself to be Hashem's ambassador, to be Hashem's representative in the world. That's a sacrilege. And therefore they both come together. Zeichali the nice liberations. But who has the right to do that? When Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim and designated us as His people, that's when we gained the privilege of carrying out that function. The Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim that gives us the right of the Zeichel Amas Liberations. Oh, thanks for asking the question. So if so, he says, when you understand this and you approach Shabbos like that, who is holier? Who's closer to Hashem? You, eating hot chicken soup with a knedel, or the guy who's living with his skin up in the cave, fasting, and like a hermit, not speaking to anybody? He's detached from materialism, true. You're entrenched in materialism and you're getting much closer to Hashem. Not entrenched. You're involved with materialism. But you're growing much closer to Hashem with what you're doing. Or A. And he says, now note. Hachshava inyan ha'eloki hidavek b'Avraham. He's going back to things that he discussed earlier. Note how you see that the divinity connected, it was attractive. Like Avraham was the magnet of godliness in this world. And afterwards it continued with the whole nation. The truth is that we talked about Shabbos when we're serving as ambassadors. Shabbos is one manifestation. Really, that's what we are. That's our function in this world. We are the ones through whom Hashem shines in this world. We do that through our behavior, and when we're in the right state, we do it in an even more direct way. We're in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. It's through the Jewish people that Hashem shows who He is. We see the Jewish people living in Eretz Yisrael, the Eretz HaKadosha, and you see that the land of Eretz Yisrael is uncannily successful, unnaturally successful. Like we said earlier, grapes the size of basketballs, right? Wheat kernels the size of kidneys, etc. Completely unnatural. You simply see, what's that? Wheat kernels the size of kidneys. It's a Gemara. That's just one example, right, of the way the crops look. This is all you see, that when the situation is set up right, the glory of Hashem shines through. The Jews went out to battle. What's that? On another way, we'll see. But when they went out to battle and had smashing successes with untrained armies against very mighty armies, it was simply, again, you saw the Shekhinah shining through the Jewish people. Today we see it in a different way. The Tzaris of the Jewish people throughout the Golos is like we discussed earlier, the Kuzari said, that's also a sign of Hashem's presence with us. But there it's not shining through. We want to be at the level where Mary, that you see the Shekhinah in its full brilliance shining through us. Not that you still see the Shekhinah's connection to us and the fact that with all our suffering we're going through Golos and we're the only ones surviving. And that also is a sign of Hashem's connection to us.
The most successful, the most disadvantages.
Right, it's not the same though. It's not the same as the supernatural manifestation when we're actually in Eretz Yisrael with the Beis HaMikdash and the whole thing is live. What?
It's greater.
What is?
Ben Shimon Zayin is greater.
Yes and no. In terms of the Chachma, yes. But in terms of the scene, not necessarily. What?
Harder to see.
Right. Yeah, there wasn't much that needed to be discussed. The Goyim all acknowledged it, right? How did the Pelishtim react when they heard that the Aron was being brought out? They panicked. Right? In the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, it says that if a Jew traveled to a foreign land, everybody bowed when he walked through the street. Everyone saw what the Shekhinah was. So now, maybe a Indian Madrega Acha Madrega. And you see how, yes, the presence of the Shekhinah is producing among the Jewish people divine effects. You see Nevi'im being produced, etc., etc. Benizhar Bazera Ad Shalaynimlat Echomehem. And you see that when Hashem decided he was going to choose these people as his people, he set things up such that he won't lose one of them. At that time, when Hashem decided he wants Yaakov's seed, after Avram, right, we got Ishmael out of the picture, and then we got Esav out of the picture, and then it was decided that all of Yaakov's seed are going to become the chosen nation, Hashem then made it his own personal project to cultivate them and breed them in the incubator called Mitzrayim, in a way. You have to note that the whole story of Mitzrayim in itself was a nis. How can you expect to take a family of 12 people, right, and wait for them to develop into a nation of millions over a few generations, but that they'll all still be bound together and holding on to the same ideals as the father of those 12 people? Can't be done. It can't be done. There's no such thing. A family, once a family starts spreading into three people, they all start going in their direction. Once again, here we're saying Hashem told Avram, I'm going to turn your people into my people. And therefore you saw a divine program of Hashem taking the Jewish people, containing them in the incubator called Mitzrayim. They would have left them in Canaan. The Jewish people would have remained in Canaan, and then Hashem would have waited for them. Why couldn't it work that way? Leave them in Canaan, let them multiply. When there are enough of them, give them the Torah. No, look around today, you see what would have happened. They would have started drifting and spreading and developing into different branches. Each one started going in their own direction, also ideology wise.
Wouldn't that have happened if Avram hadn't questioned them in the way that he did? I mean, we don't know.
Good question. Wait, yeah.
Well, when he says that not one of them was lost, 4/5 of the nation was lost in that time.
Yes, but, okay, two good questions. We'll get to that. But before we finish, before we get to both of these questions, this is what was going on in Mitzrayim. It's like we saw the Kura Bazo, Hashem called it. It was the welding furnace. Hashem was cultivating the nation. That's what he was doing. He promised Avram he would do it, and therefore he took it upon himself, Kiviyachol, his personal program for breeding an entire nation in a way that none of them were able to get away. Now, what happened, first of all, was this not just a punishment to Avram? So first of all, we'll whittle down the question a little bit. The Ramban says, you're citing Rashi. The Ramban says Avram Avinu was right in asking the question. Right? But whatever the case is, even according to Rashi, the story of Mitzrayim was predestined. And it had to work that way. Just, often the way Hashem works is that something that has to come about anyways will come about as a result of someone's slip. And that's a lesson of a slip, a punishment for something. Like Chazal also say, why did the Jews end up in Mitzrayim? Because Yaakov favored Yosef and gave him that extra robe. Does that mean that that's why it happened? Otherwise, the whole course of Jewish history would have been different? No. They were meant to go down to Mitzrayim. Just that this incident was utilized by Hashem to be the catalyst in order to bring out a lesson. So that's what happened here too. But definitely the whole story of Mitzrayim was part of Hashem's plan for Jewish history. Now your question, which was, oh, what about the 4/5 who did go lost? So there again, the 4/5 who went lost was in that controlled breeding program. Meaning it wasn't as though, you have to note how Hashem came up with divine genius and devised a plan to be able to develop a nation of millions in controlled conditions. None of them were able to drift away. Hashem was able to sift. He had them all in the cage. Excuse me. It's not the way to put it. Okay? Had them all in the incubator. Right? Had them all there. And now he was able to make his own selection process. But the nation was under absolute control. That's what he's showing here. That's a different story. At the end of the day, he left them with their Bechira. That's part of what's so amazing here. You know, the divinity in the whole story here. They were left with their own Bechira. But they were growing into a nation contained. They weren't able to mix with the Mitzrayim if they wanted to. They couldn't get away from them. Afterwards, Hashem would come and say, okay, now I have my nation. Now, we'll tweak.
We're hearing very close on the whole, like, the fear of predestined.
Oh, so that's why I stressed.
Over and, like, forgetting. So.
Oh, so that's why I stressed.
Where
that each
that
individual.
Dafka Mitzrayim was the place that was so preordained that it had to take place.
Why did it have to be Mitzrayim?
Well, I'm asking, where do we see that? What's the part for that?
Well, the term is referred to as the Kura HaBarzel, the iron furnace in the sense of purifying the gold. That's, these are psukim, right? But why it had to be that way was because in Canaan was a backward country. There were 31 different small kingdoms. It was a primitive place. Nomads roamed the land. The Jewish people could have dispersed easily and just kind of drifted apart, which was basically how the land worked at that time. Mitzrayim was contained land, controlled by a government, populated by one race. One king controlled the whole business. People couldn't get out of there. It wasn't like Canaan, which was just kind of free floating.
So you think socio-
and they stayed distinct.
It happened to work out that way, or that's why Hashem chose it, because of that was.
I want to get into the deeper levels. What was the koyach of Mitzrayim? These are things that also can be discussed. The truth is, if you want to refer to the shlo,
what we learned from the earlier,
what's that?
The tumah of Mitzrayim was a big factor in them being able to.
That's right. You know, okay, these are things that have to be discussed at length. Just in direct answer to your question, the shlo has a long arichas explaining how really the whole story of Mitzrayim and the Jewish people's yitziyah in Mitzrayim was not a result of a consequence of a sequence of a course of history. He says these really, the concept of Yitzias Mitzrayim existed before there was Mitzrayim. It's a spiritual concept that those forces of those spiritual concepts and forces were going to play out in a physical way, and it ended up playing out in Mitzrayim through the Bechira of Paro, etc., etc., and with Moshe through his own Bechira. Hashem made sure that the people who would make those right decisions, he manipulated it, not that they would make the decisions, but that when the people who would make the decisions that would be relevant, they would be together at the same time in the same place, that would all fit together. Hashem utilizes people's Bechira as a puzzle to set things up right, to make sure that things will happen in the right way. Very complex business. For that you have to be Hashem. But we'll stop here for this week.